This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor, welcoming Thaddeus McCotter, writing in American Greatness, a column he published during Easter, and he and I were not able to arrange to talk about it that day, so this is an opportunity, coming the end of April, to return to the consumptive economy. The understanding is people who run major corporations describe America as a globalized consumer economy. Globalized. Supply chain and prices. Chiefly, we're talking about China. However, Thaddeus's remark is that a productive economy has become a consumptive economy. Thaddeus, a very good evening to you. How did this happen, and what is a consumptive economy? Thank you.
Good evening to you, John. Well, I live in Detroit. I was born in 1965, the front end of Gen X, at the peak of Detroit's powers, you could argue. And throughout my entire life, we've watched outsourcing and the elimination of manufacturing and industrial and productive jobs shipped offshore. And we've seen the devastation not only in Detroit, we've seen the devastation throughout the Midwest and other parts of the country. And so the reason that I call it a consumptive economy is, as I was growing up in the late 70s, early 80s, what we would find was we were told that we were heading towards a service economy. Later, we were told we were heading towards a consumer economy. Then we were told we were heading towards a knowledge-based economy. What they weren't telling us was that we were heading towards a consumptive economy. And by that, John, I mean that the productive capacities of the United States have continued to be sent abroad, have continued to be hollowed out to the point where you continue to see the devastation and the despair in places that were once a hub of creativity, productivity, and arguably the generation of wealth here in the United States that created the greatest middle class that the world had known until recently. So when I talk about that, John, I compared it to tuberculosis, which was called the wasting disease, or consumption. Because once the disease is finished hollowing out the lungs and hollowing out the rest of your body, there is nothing left but the embrace of death. And that's kind of where our economy is now. And it was a decision made to benefit the 1%. The politicians were in their pocket to ship these offshore. They considered it fine. They argued it was free trade. We know better than that. It was negotiated trade. It sold out this country. And when you peel away that onion, you start to find out that one of the consequences of that has been the growth of populism in both parties, and which is why today much of our politics is to watch the administrative state and the 1% and their friends on Wall Street and elsewhere that are doing everything they can to tamp down the populism in both parties to create the very type of business government that Chesterton and Belloc warned about, where you have government and the elites of business doing everything they can to turn the rest of us into serfs, and they're well on their way.
Do you measure that the body politic, the voters, see this now as they did not 10 years ago?
Well, I think it's becoming more and more clear every day. You can take an apt comparison, I suppose. It's 10 years ago, a lot of Americans had not yet completely recognize the threat the communist China poses as a strategic threat and rival model of governance. Yet they do now, despite the deflections and distractions of the political class and the administrative state. You can say the same thing, obviously, because the economy, actually, I would argue they've known this longer, because they've seen it with their own eyes and felt it in their own families, in their own neighborhoods, their own communities, their own cities and states. If you drive down like Selena Zito does, who's seen so much of this and written so eloquently about it, you drive the Ohio River Valley, West Virginia, parts of West Virginia, parts of Ohio, Pennsylvania, Michigan. If you look at that, John, you can, or the, even parts of the Mississippi Delta, you could see basically ghost towns that are industrial ghost towns, the same way that we once saw mining ghost towns in the West or in parts of Michigan's Upper Peninsula, the iron ore. Places that were once flourishing that are gone, and There is very little chance that they will ever come back, and they certainly won't come back in any recognizable form we've ever known. And the people who live there are faced with immense amounts of despair, not only for themselves, but more importantly for their children and their children's future. And there is no doubt that a lot of that is responsible for some of the problems that we see with drug abuse, with methamphetamines, with alcoholism, other preventable health diseases, lifestyle choices that are made, many of them born of despair that are ultimately destructive. So when you look at it, John, you're not only seeing the industrial capacity of the United States destroyed, you're actually seeing the most productive and creative and most valuable part of the United States being destroyed before your eyes, which are her people.
Is this
and
what...
it's tragic, and it can be reversed, but it would require a whole lot of political courage.
Is this what Ross Perot meant when he debated Al Gore at the beginning of the 90s? I don't remember the dates. Probably 93.
When he... 92. It was 92 against George Bush, and then I think he ran again in 96. But the giant sucking sound is what the phrase that was most associated with him. To a certain extent, that's accurate, but it was far worse than that. It was far worse than even he imagined. But I believe that when you look at it, John, even then you saw the Reform Party and others starting to find out that this free trade wasn't, again, not free trade. It was negotiated trade. And unlike Adam Smith that said, if you can make something better than we can, you make that, and we'll make this. What they actually did is they shipped out entire sectors of the economy overseas, such as the manufacturing sector. So it wasn't a case like a lot of the libertarians or other Hayek economists would argue, where if you make an apple better than we make a widget, you should make the widget and we'll make the apple. No, you shipped all the jobs and the production in the industrial and the manufacturing sector that you could overseas. So it wasn't about a product. It was about the people and their jobs. And the goal was that nobody will notice this if we can keep the costs of goods coming in lower, even as the wages stagnate. And we saw, until the Trump administration, we saw wages stagnating for about 30 years, John. And finally, that's starting to catch up.
And you said, you indicated something can be done. There's talk now of nearshoring, friendshoring, reshoring. Is that adequate?
Well, I think the first step is to realize that you shouldn't trade with people who talk about being engaged in unrestricted warfare against the United States. Communist China is a strategic threat and rival model of governance that is openly engaged in unrestricted warfare against the United States. Now ask yourself, would a sane person outsource the manufacture of pharmaceuticals and necessary medicines to a country that is engaged in unrestricted warfare and wants to make sure that they surpass us in the world order? Not only that, but they want to destroy the world, the rules-based order as it currently exists. So I would think that that is a small step for sanity that the federal government could engage in. And yet you see the trouble they have just trying to get rid of TikTok.
And therefore, where we are right now is that the American working class has no easy alternative unless there's decisions made in Washington or in state capitals. Where can the decisions...
Well, all places. The first is the subnational incursions with places like communist China are occurring now. And you have some states that are rebuffing them, and you have other states that are embracing them, which is ridiculous. And it's all a vacuum of leadership at the federal level. And it's a bipartisan vacuum of leadership, so at least now with the Biden administration. So what you're looking at is it's largely a role for the federal government, especially trade and foreign policy. That's the role of the federal government, John. And so they're the ones who really have to get the bit in their teeth and actually do what they're told. But what you're seeing instead is this administration, you're seeing the 1% and their friends and the administrative state are basically making sure that the populace in the Democratic Party and the populace in the Republican Party are at each other's throats.
Right.
Because if they ever came together to actually do something like end the trade with communist China, people would lose billions, if not trillions of dollars. And so, you know, the politicians are going to support the money boys and women. They're not going to support the people, especially if they can keep people pitted against each other while they continue to make themselves rich and get elected in the process.
That is McCutter at Easter 2024, A Productive Economy. now a consumptive economy. This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor.